This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 739, brought to you by Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com/iFanboy for 20% off your first order. And iFanboy listeners just like you who are washing their hands and wearing their masks. Hello, welcome to my Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 739. I am Connor Kilpatrick. This is Josh Flanagan.
That's me.
We are iFanboy, and every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best one they read, call it the Pick of the Week. Also talk about that other books of the week, the patron pick, listener mail, hopefully if we have time. And we have a good time, especially reading comics. We have a good time.
Yeah.
It was a good week of comics.
Yeah, it was.
Many choices for Pick of the Week, I would think. And here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. Spoilers ahead. Exercise some caution. Josh, you had the pick.
I did have the pick. Like you said, it was tough to pick, but not for the bad reason, which is a nice change. The pick is Deceased Dead Planet, Deceased Dead Planet number one. And I'll tell you right now, I did not want to pick this.
There's a whole segment of the audience going, ugh.
I know, but like, you have to pick the one that has the most strong points.
Somebody in my house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when I was looking at it, we're going to talk about all the other ones that sort of had a shot. But mm-hmm. when I added it up in terms of expectations fulfilled, art, character moments, delivering what we had come to expect, and then more, and then finally plot twists and surprises, it was really hard for me to think of something that I had sort of liked or was better than Dead Planet number one.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, we really like these books, and I get if you don't, you're probably annoyed, but that's not, I mean, it's just the way it is. But you know, the first miniseries ended with and we heard that it was successful and they were going to expand, and we were like, ugh. Mm-hmm. But because usually what that means is they're going to drive a concept to the ground. And it doesn't mean they won't do it eventually. But right now, almost everything they've done has worked. The miniseries have worked. The digital-only series has worked. And now you've got this is the official sequel, the 7-issue miniseries. And it's working. This was really good. This was the last book I read, which means this was the most anticipated.
Yeah.
And my favorite part about it was the time jump. You know, we jump forward. Was it 5 years?
I'm not even sure. Five years
later. That's what it says on page 7. And I love that we get to we jump ahead, so we don't have to see them building out the society, or at least, you know, whatever their society is. We just jump right into them surviving on this new Earth as best they can, fighting off an alien invasion of that new Earth. Because why should the new Earth be any different than the old one? And then something happens that brings them back home. I thought this was terrific, and the Trevor Harris scene art, like in the first miniseries, was stellar.
Yeah, that had a lot to do. It's like the original team came back, so it was the same thing as before. We've had a little break from, And, you know, it all works. You know, the idea of the thing in the, you know, where they went, how things ended up, the fact that John Constantine is still sitting there by himself at the beginning, you know, it there was a lot there, you know, some really fun concepts, you know, the cyborg head, you know, like which is sort of like creepy and also really funny. And you have John and Damian, you know, taking up the mantle of
they've grown a bit since 5 years. So
yeah, and that helps too because
in their 20s.
Yep, you know, Batman can look like Batman and not like a little kid. You know, and even there, the way that the Superman and Batman, you know, interact with each other, where Batman sort of just crushes through, and Superman's like, whoa, let's be cool, you know. But they both have. It's almost like they both have a little more humanity than it's.
Well, they've also both been friends since they were kids.
Yeah,
you know, so there's a bond there, and they, you know, they needle each other, they bust each other's balls, and.
But also, this is a way that this story is a way that you can have your cake and eat it too. In a way, you know, like it is fun to think, you know, this is Ultimate Spider-Man is how it is because, you know, you start over with a clean slate, and here you get that, but it isn't, you know, it isn't permanent. You get to live in this for a little while, but in this story, it's fun to see what are the next, you know, people going. Then we move along. First of all, in the end of that, there's a scene with Lois, and he's like, I'm not really comfortable with being called Superman. And she's like, then stop earning it. And I was like, oh, that's good. Oh, that's real good. That's real President Lane, like President Roslin. Then right away, so far, like just flipping through the book, every scene in this was quality, you know. And then you have Ollie and Dinah, you know, having a really great scene together where he's sort of got to accept the fact that she's much more powerful than him. He's, you know, getting older and he doesn't want to go back and he's scared. And then he does it anyway and he gets a magic sword.
So, yeah, so Cyborg is back on Earth. He was one of the people that stayed behind. And his severed head has been laying there for 5 years as, you know, the moss grows around it. And he's been sending a signal with the last bit of his power out into the universe, a Morse code message to tell them to come home. We find out why at the very end, but the Justice League gets that message and decide they've got even though they've got a new life, they're relatively safe. They're going to go back to see, to rescue their friend.
Yeah, like it's just a classic no man left behind war story kind of thing.
And that's when everything goes wrong. And I mean, so we said spoiler warning, and I don't because
yeah,
you know, this is a book where a lot of people die, but so the first death I wasn't surprised by. It's pretty heavily telegraphed.
You know what? I was, but not, I shouldn't have been, but I was so into the moment that, like, when it all goes wrong, I was like, no, because I was so into it, and I really wanted them to succeed. Like, I lost all of my critical faculties in that way.
Sure.
Like, I just was in the story.
Well, just in the scene earlier in the book when they're talking, I was like, okay, one of them's going to die.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know who's going to be, but I knew one of them was going to die.
Well, after it happened,
one of those classic, like, we have to do this thing, you know, even though we're safe here. It's like, oh, well, one of them's dying.
It just, but and it still, as soon as it happened, I went, oh, yeah, like, there's stakes. But because I cared about the characters, because I really didn't want those things to happen, I forgot that they might happen. And then there's other things that come up.
But the brilliant thing about that is it's the Star Trek 3 thing is where, you know, the big death happens, but that's just the swerve to make the second big death even, or not death or whatever that means at the end, more shocking, because you know, the big thing about Earth that we've seen through all these miniseries is that Wonder Woman is still there and she's still infected.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Superman has been infected, but he's off. He flew himself into the sun and he's in there sort of consuming the sun.
Yeah.
Which was weird and creepy, but Wonder Woman is still the big threat on Earth, and so she shows up, and that's when things go terribly wrong for everyone.
Yeah, and it also led to the idea that, like, there's some sort of, like, she's strategizing in some way,
right?
Even though she's a zombie, and then you do have that looming threat of whatever the Superman eating the sun means. Right. I mean, they're like, we're not even going to worry about that, even though that seems like a much bigger problem.
It's too big for all of us to worry about. But it was great. You know, structurally, everything comes together. The sword comes together. The conversation between Diana and Ollie comes together. The conversation between Lois and Jonathan comes together. Everything meets at the end.
Crypto. I mean, like, there were all of
that was a
moments.
Great moment.
Yeah.
That was a really great moment.
It's just... And so I think all of those really nice moments really threw me off my guard, and that's just quality structure, you know.
It's real good.
Yeah.
And I know what everyone's thinking and saying, but it's really good.
It was
there's
really
a reason
good.
Why it's really popular.
I was like, let's do a Green Lantern Black Canary book right now. You know, there have been really great ones in the past, you know, and Tom Taylor seems to have a real handle on those characters, and I'm down for it.
I mean, they've basically done it, but, like, you know, they've done a really good job of exploring the different corners of this world. And if they ever wanted to sort of make this into a new DC universe, that'd be, you know, then, but Tom Taylor can't write all of it, I guess.
No. That really is the key, I think, that... You know, he's reminding you that you love them, but then I think what it is the reason that I don't sort of see it coming is that it feels like a regular comic book. And in a real comic book, there aren't actually any stakes. Right. And then you forget, like, this book's like, oh, no, there are stakes, which I think was the same thing that worked about, you know, like Marvel Zombies or something like that, which is the same thing, basically. But
and it feels even more impactful now because it's not just like one miniseries where you can be like, okay, well, that was an Elseworlds miniseries. Yeah. This is becoming like a whole universe. You know, we've had... two other miniseries or specials, and we've had, you know, other books, and now we've got a sequel. So even though they're starting to tell this tapestry, this longer form storytelling.
And also, it feels like the jumping off point was exactly where DC Comics was at the time. It wasn't an alternate version. You know what I mean? Right. Like, we didn't come back, and sometimes when these kind of stories start, you know you're not in the regular DC universe. But if you were to read this book from the beginning, the first issue of the last miniseries, and they said this is canon, you'd be like, oh, yeah, these are...
Well, maybe yes and no.
Well, I guess there's a little difference.
One of the things we talked about was that he sort of took from all the different incarnations.
Okay, well, then let me put it this way. It was the way that I imagine it, and so when it happens, it feels natural.
It'd be a better one.
These versions of these characters are like, the best ones. We've said that since the beginning. That's always been the hook for this, for you and I think.
I totally forgot that Alfred was still alive.
Yeah.
For some reason. He's because he's dead everywhere else. So when he was there, I was like, oh, Alfred's there.
You're right.
I thought Damian was talking to like a computer or something, but nope, that's Alfred. Yeah. This was great. Probably my pick. I didn't even think about what my pick would be because there was just so many things I enjoyed. Mm-hmm. But if I probably got into my head, I would have, you know, we often say, and it's true, I often don't think about the larger ramifications of the pick. Like, have I picked this book a lot? Is it, you know, is it four Marvel books in a row? I don't think about what's happened in the past, but
no.
We've picked Deceased enough. There's a lot of people that love Deceased. There's a lot of people that, for whatever reason, don't, and they get annoyed. But, like, I probably would have picked it.
I didn't have another choice. If anything else I would have put in there would have been less. And not by a lot, but it would have been dishonest, and then I'm rigging it, and I don't want to do that.
Just be glad you don't have to write 1,000 words on why.
Yep. That's true. Could have done it. Just got to get those muscles back going again, and I think it'd be just fine. Another contender. This is the first thing I read, and I had completely forgotten about what had happened in the first issue when I started. It was Strange Academy number 2, written by Scotty Young, with art by Humberto Ramos, colors by Edgar Delgado, and letters by Clayton Cowles. And... I gotta say, it has been really fun watching Scotty Young become a really competent writer, and a really fun writer. And, you know, he's a guy I know, and I remember when the sort of writing thing first started. Like, this stuff was pretty good and fun, but you know, he's gotten really good at it, and it's really fun to watch that. Now, part of the reason is that this book, Strange Academy, should be hacky bullshit. It is a ripoff of Harry Potter and X-Men Academy. There's not really a new concept there, but it's fun. If it has any drawback, it's that there are a bunch of characters, and it can be a little hard, especially since it's been so long since the first issue came out, to sort of know who everybody is and what there is. But it's still handled pretty well. You know, this is a day in the life of, you know, the first day of classes or whatever, And it's, you know, it was really fun to read. And then at the same time, you have Humberto Ramos, who's always a really fun artist. But, man, I think he was shining on this one. I think there was some really great sequences. You know, that was it was a good kind of book for his strength to shine.
Well, he does giant like creatures exceptionally well.
Yeah,
and, you know, magic and you know demons, and so that. I mean, he does. I love his character work, but he's also extremely good at that kind of world. So he's almost like the perfect artist for this book.
But you know, at the same time that's happening, you know, they're all characters. It's not just like here's a big monster. They've got postures and facial expressions and you know real storytelling.
He's a cartoonist.
Yeah, totally. And if you look, a lot of this book really is just people, quote unquote, talking.
Yeah.
Like there's not action on every page. There's not a bunch of stuff, and it's beautiful. And I think the colors lend themselves to that in a way. Like this book in this setting is a really cool way to sort of let loose while still living with grounded characters. So it's not just look at these amazing visuals and concepts. It's you know people who you've starting to care about.
I'm glad I read it. I almost didn't because it had been so long. I think the first issue was pre-comics not coming out, so I think it's been like 3 months. And then I thought, well, maybe I'll read the first one again, but I just didn't have time. I had a lot of books, and I just had other things. I didn't have time to do it. So I said, well, I'll just read it, and hopefully it works. And it worked because I didn't remember the characters. I didn't remember the characters exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're looking at 11 characters on the character sheet in the beginning, and I don't know who any of them are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Emily, Doyle, Zoe, Herman. Like, I don't know who these people are. But by the end, I still didn't necessarily know who the characters were specifically, but it didn't necessarily matter. This is basically the first day at the Academy. If I recall correctly, the first issue was them getting invited to the Academy, sort of the introduction, and this is a magic academy for the Marvel Universe. So it's like a school for young magicians or young magic adept people that's run by Dr. He's run it, but it's like Dr. Voodoo and magic. And, you know, so it's basically, as Josh said, the X-Men or Harry Potter for the magic set.
Yeah.
And so this issue is the first day of class. So it's really a series of vignettes as these characters go through their different classes and meet their instructors and have adventures in class with, you know, spell books and things, and it's very Harry Potter. But so it was fine. Like in terms of, I know enough about who these people are. I remember there's one girl who's sort of new to the whole world, so she's sort of the
Harry Potter.
The Harry Potter character. So it didn't necessarily matter that I didn't know exactly who all the students were, just to know that they were students at this academy and, you know, they're figuring it out. And it was really fun and the art was gorgeous.
Check out on the digital page 13.
All right, hold on.
It's a shot at the beginning, and Magic is in the foreground, and whatever, it's her face. And the background is Damien Hellstrom. And he's making a facial expression and is shadowed in such a way. Like, that is a beautiful drawing. And then as you come down, you see the girl, whose name I don't know, turn and look at some shit happening outside. And she's lit in front, so you can tell her, and everybody else is looking forward, except a couple of people in the background. Like, each panel is jam-packed. And then the next panel, it's a three-panel page, is the giant girl, who's great, who's a great design. You know, we're looking at her from above at sort of a Dutch angle. She's ripping a branch off a tree. You've got two mindless ones just hanging out and watching. One of them sitting on the ground. Like, that's one of the fun things about the book is in the background, there's a mindless one every, you know, sort of just hanging out in the background in a bunch. And like, you know, and the scale of that shot. And then you can kind of look in the windows and you see people are standing there looking at it. This is like the least half-assed art I've seen in a long time.
It's full.
It's really full. Look at the crowd shots in the lunch hall and in the not the swamp thing, the man thing, you know, like his plant room. Like, it is, it's crazy. Ramos must have just been exhausted at the end of this.
Only had 3 months to draw it.
Sure. Well,
this is the level of detail he puts in. I mean, and he colors it. No, Edgar Delgado colors it. Edgar Delgado's coloring is great. It's
really,
it's a mix of, it almost, there's like the page we're talking about, it almost looks like it's, I mean, it's not, but it almost looks like it's colored pencil at times. It's just there's a level of
I see that
texture to it that is obviously done digitally, but it's not like Matthew Wilson style, but it's also not like Marvel.
Yeah.
You know, overly colored with a computer style. It's into some nice middle ground.
And it's, the whole thing has a really nice palette to it. You know, it's a, like, it wasn't, there was nothing about it, I think, story-wise, that was like, this was amazing, it blew me away, but like, just as a whole quality piece, you know, and you know, you can just kind of tell people are having fun with something when they're making it, that's what I get the sense of, and I think that that always reads.
It was incredibly fun. I mean, I think, you know, on all merits, it worked.
Yep.
I don't think there's any qualification needed. It's a story of the first day in the life of these students, and as they're trying to figure out their new crazy school, and it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Now, eventually, I'm gonna have to figure out who some of these people are.
Well,
because there's a lot of them.
Well, you'll get there. Yeah, I mean, you've only had two issues, and they were months apart. So
that's true.
What are you gonna do? Over at DC, we have, I think this is the end. We've finished the Lois Lane 12-issue series by Greg Rucka and Mike Perkins. And what do you make of the ending here?
I think I don't know what Greg Rucka was trying to do with this miniseries. It was really interesting in the beginning with Lois sort of off on her own. Hiding, writing this expose about some Russian murder, and you know, people trying to kill her, and sort of dealing with her husband and not letting him get involved. And then it sort of twisted, and we added the question in, and then we added some, you know, like skeleton lady, and then there was a nun. And once all that got added to the story, I feel like it fell apart. I don't know what we were trying to do here.
I think that there's kind of good things about a lot of those. I think there's connective tissue that didn't come together.
Yeah.
In the beginning, we kind of didn't know what she was working on. And then the reveal of what she's working on wasn't...
I don't even know what she was...
I mean, what she was working on is basically it's like a phenomenon of people who have sort of hopped dimensions in worlds, and it's messed them up.
Mm-hmm.
And like, this is a thing that's going on, you know, in their world, which makes sense. And in this world, it would be kind of thing where just like a journalist would sort of discover it and talk about it, and you'd read it in the Sunday paper, and then you'd move along, and they kind of just accept it. I never quite knew what was going on with Renee Montoya. Like, right. I got her relationship with Lois, and I think that was really good and fun. Everything else she did away from that, I wasn't sure what was going on. She's got the girlfriend in this, and was that the skeleton lady after they exercised her in the last one?
I think so, yeah.
I never quite... And also, like, there's this thing that happens, like they're very obvious about the fact that Renee is with this woman, and, like, mm-hmm. they're like, we, you know, hey, lover, and we kiss, and I was like, all right, you don't need to... I was about to say shove it in my face, but that's something that somebody would say who's homophobic, and that's not what I mean. If it was,
it's just been it's been 10 years of her as being like an, you know, accepted out character, and it's like, we don't, you know,
chill out. And then also, like, there was a kiss between them, and it was like this much too graphic. Like, it was like two tongues met each other on the panel, and I was like, what is this? Like, I don't want that. It doesn't. Not because they're women, just any characters kissing like that in the middle of a comic book, it's drew me. I was like, why are you showing me this angle? It's weird. There's that, and there's all the other characters, these other women that came along, I don't think were ever defined very well. Like, I started to understand the nun. It's just like it was just too much in the pot.
There was a lot going on. I think that was the problem. The more I got added, the more confusing it was. There was good things I liked.
Yes.
When she went back to the planet, and, you know, shockingly, all the stuff, the planet's great with Perry and, you know, Lois and Clark, and Lois can't spell, but is she doing it on purpose? Like, that, you know, that joke, and the stuff with her and Clark that we liked throughout the whole series has been good. But then everything else is like, I don't know or care about the nun. I don't really know or care about any of the stuff that's happening.
You know what's interesting, though, is that I kind of liked, like, the very end, but I was like, so it seems like they were trying to get somebody released from, you know, one of the immigration holding pens.
Yeah.
And they were, and I was like, where the hell did this come from? What does this have to do with anything? And I get the message that he's trying to make, But, like, does that have to do with the multiverse thing? I didn't know who the woman who they were releasing was. I felt like I was supposed to know, and maybe I did at one point. You know, everything that's just Lois in a room talking to somebody and, like, working and not paying attention to what's going on is great. You know, in the planet. Is this Superman out? Okay.
Well, I don't know. Actually, I don't know.
Because they're walking down the street, and, like, he's just...
They must be.
And he's just in the bullpen, you know, typing away. And I'm sorry, if you tell everybody you're Superman, I don't think you can sit in that bullpen and type away.
Yeah, people would still be bothering you.
Constantly. Or they would just be like, everyone would be staring at him. I don't care how jaded a news person you are, like, oh, I've known him all along. It's going to take some adjustment. And then afterwards, they're just walking down the street, and I was like...
Holding hands.
You're the most famous person on Earth. She's pretty well known. You don't make it 5 feet.
Yeah, I mean, there was a bit of that this week in
yeah, and
like, it's just, yeah.
There was a, we're going to talk about Superman, but just as the first thing, like, it doesn't work.
I think the odd thing to me is, like, okay, so this is a rhetorical question. When was the last time there was a Lois Lane series? It's been a long time. I can't even think of the last time. And so here's your chance. Greg Rucka, clearly who loves the character, wrote her really well in other incarnations.
She's a great character in this.
This is your chance to tell a Lois Lane miniseries, and it just seems like an odd plot. Like, this is it. This is your finally the chance to tell, like, a full year-long Lois Lane story where she's the star. And it was very convoluted
I think strange. There were really good ideas in here. I think it was an issue of execution, because I think what he's trying to do was introduce a huge sort of cosmic superhero concept in this multiversal thing and displacement and all that stuff, and have her attack it the same way that she would, you know, corporate structure or an environmental, you know, investigative piece. I just don't think it came together.
Yeah.
I still enjoyed reading it.
I enjoyed reading it for the most part, but there was I think there was a few months where I was just like, I don't know what's happening here or why. But there's always something in each issue that to be like, ooh, Greg Rucka's terrific. And Mike Perkins is good, though sometimes inconsistent. He's brings a different energy to DC. I'm glad I read Adventure Man number 2. Matt Fraction, Tara Dodson, Rachel Dodson, Clayton Cowles. The first issue was patron pick. Here's another 40-page issue. I don't know why
was
they
it
keep 40 doing
40. Pages? I did not notice it this time.
Yes, I don't know why they keep doing this.
They're not going to be able to keep this pace up.
Like, you've got 4 issues worth of content here, you know? But this was better.
Yes. And
this was much better. I think it was much more focused. So the first issue was split between the fantasy world in the books of Adventure Man and then the real life. Where we meet this crazy family and clearly the woman who's being positioned as the new Adventure Man. So in this issue, we get to focus more on her, and I like that much more.
I mean,
there's some good concepts in here.
I wish that the first issue had been as...
80 pages?
No, just, a lot of stuff came together in this one where I sort of was like, oh, this is what's going on. I think the structure of the first issue was flawed, and that it just wasn't clear. About what was going on, and not in a fun way. This one, I was like, okay, I know where we are. I know sort of what the stakes are. I think the concepts, the idea that, you know, she is in her head, and then she goes to see, and there's this building there, and she's the only one who can see it. I thought that was really well...
Yeah, I love that.
...rendered in comic book form. You know, that can be a tricky thing to sort of storytell, but they did it. You know, she fights some ancient robots and turns out that she's quite handy doing that. You know, her son is really smart, but she's trying to keep it away from it. Like, there's a lot of good things in it. And I thought the Dodson art has a quality of being a little overly dramatic or melodramatic is probably the word I'm looking for. But I think it came together with the tone in this one. Where not so much last time. It's a little pulpy. It's a little over the top.
You know? I was going to call it pulpy, which works because this is a pulp story.
Yeah.
I love the design of things. I love the Art Deco building. It's called an Art Deco building. It is an Art Deco building, but it's a very classic. You know, old buildings in New York from a certain era all look like this. And the giant statues outside. Yeah. And you don't make buildings like that anymore. And so that was cool. The design, and then inside, the design was carried through to the interior and even the robots that she ended up fighting as she went into this secret building. It just looked really, really good. And
because it's pulpy, I guess you can let it get away with this. But the girl who, I don't know her name, you know, the mom, she's like a She's like a post intellectual nerd's wet fantasy. Yeah. Like she's got the glasses. She runs a bookstore. She's responsible though because she's a single mom. She rides the cool scooter. It's just it's like the postmodern version of like the beautiful damsel heroine. But
she's the platonic ideal in Portland.
Yeah, that's probably exactly right. And you know, I'm not immune to that. I'm like, oh, they're really hitting a lot of notes here.
Checking a lot of boxes.
Yeah, but it's this close to being like, all right, get off that nose. You're on it. But it was a much more cohesive issue, and I enjoyed it a heck of a lot more than the last one. And I'm also glad I read it.
Me too.
Speaking of other things, I'm glad about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad to have Mack Weldon back on as a sponsor this week.
Yeah.
But not even as glad as I am that I have found them and pulled them into my life.
I'm glad that I've got a package arriving today.
Oh.
With new Mack Weldon gear, which we'll talk about in a second. That's what I'm excited about.
Mine arrived 2 days ago, so don't you worry. I can fill in the blanks. Mack Weldon is better than whatever you are wearing right now. It's a premium men's essentials brand that believes in smart design and premium fabrics. And to that, by the way, I said, honey, I got some underwear coming. And she said, do they make anything for women? I went, no. So that meant I didn't have to buy a bunch of other stuff at the same time. And I know that that is horrible. And I recognize it, but it was like, this one is mine.
This is mine. You can't have everything.
I know in the world there's a patriarchy, but it does not exist in my house. I was like, no, this is for mine. Every time I buy something, I have to buy one for all of you, but you can't. I got these, and I'm wearing them, and I'm happy. Is that wrong? I don't know. Mack Weldon offers industry-leading underwear and much more than that. It's a one-stop shop for all men's basics, like socks, shirts, hoodies, underwear, Vesper polos. I don't know what a Vesper polo is. Do you?
Sounds sexy, though.
It does. Vesper. It's like a Bond girl in a polo.
Yeah.
Four-way active shorts.
That's one of the ones I've got coming.
Yeah. I knew that for some reason.
Because I sent you a picture of my order.
That's where we're at. No, we're totally at that. You know, the deal is it's about smart design. It's about premium fabrics and about simple shopping. You know, you can work the website. It's not going to be like, well, you're not going to have to call your kids to figure out how to work the website. You'll be good to go. It will be the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, and sweatpants that you will ever wear. And I'm saying that's true. That's the case. They have silver underwear and shirts that are naturally antimicrobial, which means they don't stink. You want to be comfortable. So if you don't like your first pair of underwear, you can keep it and they'll still refund you, no questions asked. But you're just cutting yourself off the knees there. I don't see why you'd do that. So I had a shipment arrive 2 days ago. I ordered on Sunday. It was here by Wednesday, which I didn't expect to be so quick, especially given all this. Now, that's not a promise. That's not something they said, but that was the deal. What did I get? I got some extra 18-hour jersey underwear. Those are my standard. I get some of those. Mm-hmm. But I also went and I got some of the AirKnit ones, which I've never gotten before.
Oh, interesting.
Pretty good. They're very, I don't know, it's been very hot out here on the East Coast, very humid. They breathe. And they noticeably breathe better. I was like, oh, this is fantastic right now. I had not been aware that I was lacking this in my life.
Sure.
But I was very, very happily surprised. And I got a pair of swim trunks.
Yes.
Because I hadn't had any. And yesterday I went and picked the boys up. Then we got in our little pool outside at the end of the day.
But you have no swimsuit until now?
They don't fit.
let's talk about the last 3 months, what that's done.
Well, they don't fit, but also they weren't, it just wasn't, my wife looked at them and she goes, those look nice. And I was like, what do you mean? She goes, they just don't look cheap and crappy like the other ones you have. And I was like, yes. So there's a little give. There's a little stretch. Like the Velcro in the front's real nice. It's got those sort of sealed zipper kind of things that are going on. I don't think the pockets are waterproof, but you know, and they're a little flexible. They're kind of the right length, you know, not too short, not too long.
Yep.
And they're just it's a nice pair of swim trunks. I was very happy about that. Like refreshing the underwear drawer is just there's nothing better than doing that because you're getting that every day.
Yeah, I mean, I'll talk about what I got next time because they're arriving literally this afternoon. But, you know, the first time when Mack Weldon first came on the show, it was all about underwear, and I got a ton of their underwear. So this time I thought, as I was doing my order, I thought, you know, we talked about the pants before. They've added a whole new bunch of new lines of clothing. So I thought, well, it's hot, summertime. I need some shorts to wear around the house that I'm not, you know, that we're always in. So I went all shorts this time, and So I'm very excited to try. I got the swim trunk. I think the same one you got, mm-hmm. the same design. And then the four-way active short, and then the other active short. I think that's what's coming. I have to see what's coming. But they have a sweatpants. They have a shorts version of the Ace sweatpants, mm-hmm. which we love. And I believe the other short is almost like a shorts version of the Strata of the Radius pants. But we'll see. We'll see.
The swim trunks are very similar to that.
I'm excited.
But listen. We're almost done with this, but that's not all. And this part was really cool. So they have their own free loyalty program called Weldon Blue. Level one gets you free shipping for life. You can go to the website. You can check out how this stuff works. You reach level two by spending $200 total.
Right.
Okay? And from then on, you will start getting 20% off every order for the next year. So when I'm loading up the cart, I kept noticing the prices of the things go down. Like significantly with the 20% off, and I thought, oh, this is great. I can get more than I thought I was going to be able to get, and it continues for the next year,
which is incredible.
That's awesome.
I had the same thing happen to me. I ordered enough clothing to get the discount kick in, and I was like, oh,
I can get more.
I can get one more thing.
Yeah, that was awesome. So, yeah. I mean, I hope you can tell, like, not the cheapest stuff on earth. But it's premium. It is. It's premium. It's worth it. It's not the most expensive stuff on earth either. I mean, if you go into Macy's or whatever, you're spending more, and it's not as good. Anyway, we really do like this stuff, so I'm always happy when they come back on. For 20% off your first order, visit macweldon.com/ifanboy and enter promo code ifanboy. Connor and I could really talk about anything that we're enthusiastic about, and it will be the same show.
I'm trying to hold back, which is why I'm going to wait till next time, because otherwise we'll do 30 minutes on shorts, and
it'll be completely sincere.
Thanks, Mack Weldon. That was exciting that you're back. Marvel's Axe number
four.
You got me to read this series. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you did. This was another terrific read this week.
Yeah, number four was this was also in the running of the top three pick of the week ones. It had a lot going for it. Again, I think I've said this before. Whoever Well B is. maybe the weirdest name in comics. Wow, though. I mean, what a sort of debut for me to a guy who really just nailed this the way that this could and should look.
This was a great looking book. This was because the thing about Welby is, like, I would love if Welby drew like a. I just like saying Welby. Welby, because I don't even know who knows. I like Welby's style. I would love Welby to be on a bigger book. Although I don't know if it's a style that's mainstream enough, but it really works as this retro Marvel, but still very modern looking comic.
Yeah, it's like there's bits of John Paul Leone, but then bits of, you know, like sort of the Francesca Francavilla, and then bits of retro, like a John Romita. His Spider-Man looks like a John Romita Spider-Man.
Yes, I love the way Spider-Man looks in this book.
Yeah, and then
it doesn't hurt that they all look like they're from 1987.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Characters. The very first page with all the Iron Men, I was like, oh, that's the stuff right there. There's no. I don't even remember. Like, what was the Warren Ellis?
Extremis.
That's the one. Yeah. You know, like Hercules looks like he's supposed to look. You know, like, this is a lot about the nature of heroism. And there, you know, there's a couple of bits at the beginning where, you know, basically there's a Kraven, but he's a lion now, and he's all conflicted and fucked up. And the idea is that there is a mounted Captain America head on the wall.
Well, that was the cliffhanger from the last issue, was that this kid, what's his name?
Doesn't matter.
It was a plot point, and you posted it on Instagram.
Yep.
He's David. David is not mutated. This is after the mutation happens that leads to Earth X, which happened so many years ago. And he's come to New York to find heroes to save the day. He wants to find Captain America. Captain America is the one who will save him. And then he gets to the end of the last issue, and Kraven the Hunter captures him, and we see a mounted head on his wall that is Captain America, and that was the big cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And that's not exactly what happened in terms of not all what it seems is happening.
And the last thing I'm going to point out is that they are all in their costumes from that era, except Hawkeye has four arms. And it's the weirdest thing.
He's mutated.
Yep. Also, there's one other bit. I know this is the quick one, but the trap mm-hmm. that Kraven sets for Spider-Man I was like, I've never seen that before. That's new.
Yeah.
And it was a little like reading an old comic book where, you know, you'd put Batman in the trap and use the reader, even if you were a little kid, would just go, ugh. But with this, I was like, I don't know how he's getting out of that. Yeah, I was really impressed by that concept. I said, that's new.
And none of the other heroes seemed to be any hero to get him out of it.
No.
There was a long conversation with him, like, in this really painful trap. Yep. I was like, can't somebody cut him out?
And then I was spending time thinking, like, who is going to get him out? How do you do that? And then Hercules did it. And I went, well, that makes sense. Can't cut him. Anyway, read that. It was good.
One of the things about there being, like, a four-month or three-month break of comics coming out was I feel like I'm constantly coming out of a coma. So, like, Doctor Strange number 5 comes out, and I was like, have I been reading this? And if I have, what has been going on? Like, I just even the idea of, have I been following this book before? I think I had, and by the time I realized I had, but I wasn't quite sure even.
There's books that I stopped reading, and then I didn't remember if I had stopped reading them or vice versa.
But I liked this. This was also good.
This has been the Surgeon Supreme storyline has been really fun, and I keep finding myself wondering if, like, I'm like, is this Doctor Strange, or is this just like a mutated Tony Stark who is now Doctor Strange?
And they've been doing that for a while.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, I don't know if it matters. Because the character as he exists now, and I know about the old kid, but I never had a ton of affection for him. So I'm having fun with these. Kev Walker,
terrific,
is so fantastic. He really is one of those artists that whenever he's on a book, I get really excited about it. I will read whatever he draws. Or at least look at the drawings of whatever he draws.
And like Humberto Ramos, he's terrific for this kind of... He draws great demons and creatures and...
I think that the thing about Doctor Strange, whatever this current iteration of it is that he is right up against it all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, he's decided that he wants to be a surgeon, but he doesn't have time for the thing, and he's always late for it. And now that I'm describing it, it sounds terrible, but there's like a constant sense of like, I got to go do this, and anxiety that you're getting behind and the thing you're doing is really hard, but you're not really worried he's not going to do it. Like, there's totally real danger, but he's like, all right, whatever, we'll just fix this problem. We got to move on to the next thing. And I can relate to that a lot. it's a great book. It really, I get Doctor Strange down. I look forward to it. And that's pretty cool.
Yep. So I almost read Money Shot number 6, but didn't.
So Vault Comics.
So you can tell me.
It's possible that we felt a little guilty. So I looked at sort of the releases from Vault Comics this week, and I saw that there was this book, Money Shot number 6, written by Tim Seeley and Sarah Beatty, drawn by Rebecca Isaacs. So those are all names that I know. Colored by, this is my favorite, Kurt Michael Russell. And I thought, I know why you did that. And of course, letters by Crank. I saw in the solicitation it said this is a good jumping on point. So okay, I will now give this a shot. But based on the description, it's not something I would have read.
That's partially why I read the description, and then I flipped through it digitally, you know, like because there's no actual book to flip through. Right. I scrolled through the pages and I thought, well, the art looks good, but
yeah,
I think I know what this is, and I don't know that I'm all that interested in it.
So there was a very helpful and very clear page at the beginning explaining where we were. I thought that was very helpful. Mm-hmm. And it was a really good book for what it was, which is to say it was like sex criminals with sci-fi.
Right.
And I know that I keep going back to that book and hoping that it's going to hook me because there's things I really like about it, not just tits. But, mm-hmm. you know... There's something about it that I don't quite relate to, and I think that's how I felt about this book. I thought it was really well done. I think the characters are drawn out really well, but the sort of like crazy sex. I sound like such a
what, puritan. So tell everyone what the
okay
premise of the book is.
In the future, near future, 10-15 years from now, the government is run by an anti-science administration, so all the funding for science has dried up, and so this woman figured out a way to travel between alien worlds, and the way that she funds it is they fuck all the aliens and then stream it back to Earth, and people pay for their memberships to the porn sites where they fucking aliens, and that funds their research. And so there's all the sort of conflict going on is that now all the science team are all wrapped up with each other because of the fucking.
Right.
And then also there's a threat of that we found in this one of alien STIs. And that's kind of scary. And the woman, there was some real, you read it, right? STI, well, sexually transmitted infection, STD.
Oh, okay.
Doesn't matter. And I think we used to say STD, and now they say STI, and at some point I picked up actual new language.
Is that true?
I mean, what if I listen to, like, Dan Savage say STI, and I think they said it in this. Anyway, there was some really nice characterization that went on at the end of this, where the one guy used to date the girl, and then another girl was interested in the other girl, and she sort of tried to talk to the guy about it, and he got pissed off, and then he felt better about it, and then warned the girl who, the suitor, he's like, yeah, she does have this thing that she does, which is the thing that's been playing out for the entire issue, and I thought that was really nice. Tim Seeley, you know, is a great writer. He's got a handle on things. The things that he writes about are not usually my favorite things, but if that tracks.
So the question is, are you going to read more of this?
I don't know.
Hmm.
You know, like, there's a lot of things that are really good that I'm not into. Maybe. I mean, I what I can see happening is what I'll tell you is that I will read the next few issues and then I'll go, all right, that's good. You know, it's not like I hate this is terrible. It's just, you know, it's not my favorite restaurant. What do you want?
Superman 23, Bendis and Kevin Maguire and John Timms. John Timms writing the sort of B story, or drawing the B story of this. I know you have some issues. I just wanted to say a couple of things about it. One, I love Dr. Fate, even though he's wearing weird bell bottoms now. And I liked the idea of Superman sort of having a therapy session.
I loved that.
Where Dr. Fate's like, so you did this crazy thing. Why did you do that? And really sort of drilling down in the idea that he's sort of traumatized by the fact that his son went off and grew up and he missed that. And now his son is living in the future and he doesn't get to see him and he doesn't really get to raise his son. His son sort of warp speed from kid to adult. And it was a really nice conversation. And you're like, yeah, he kind of is in a bad place emotionally right now.
I love that.
And maybe not the best time to be making giant universe-shaking decisions. And at one point, Zatanna shows up. She's like, I could reverse this. And I was like, do it.
Yeah.
But she didn't do it.
I thought she said I couldn't reverse this. That makes sense.
No, she said, I could change this for you if you want.
Oh, man. That would be good.
So that was good. Now, Kevin Maguire is one of my all-time favorite artists. I still think that when they color him in the modern style, and Alex Sinclair is the colors, and he's a good colorist, but I feel like it makes everyone look waxy.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I don't know why.
But the acting,
it's much better than it used to be when he had his personal colors. So it was not actually professional colors. But this is better. But still, I feel like it still at times makes everyone look a little waxy. But he still got it.
But the acting that he did with Superman's face and his body language during that conversation was really great. It really sort of communicated exactly what the words were saying. I don't know what the deal is with this new Dr. Fate. There's always sort of a new version.
He came up in a miniseries that was really good a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, they're constantly changing who's under them on the helmet. So right now it's this new kid and much wiser beyond his years.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that.
Oh, I'm sorry. She said she can't reverse it.
Right, yeah, no, that was, yeah, exactly.
That's right. Sorry, I think in my head I was like, I read it because I really want her to do it, so I read it wrong.
This is a longer conversation than we have time for.
Yeah.
I think this at least shed a light on how ridiculous the coming out is. And if it was done, I mean, like, I get that as a normal person, if it's done as sort of a reaction, like I do this all the time myself. Like, I have to say things. Otherwise, I feel like I'm hiding things and I don't feel like myself. But there are repercussions for this, and the repercussions for him are gigantic. And I like the idea that we, like, I don't, it makes sense that they've turned a lot of these characters in these comic books into celebrities in the way that we understand celebrity now in our world. And I don't want that to be the book about how Superman is a celebrity and has to deal with it. But you're going to have to.
Yeah, I don't like doing away with secret identities. I think they're an integral part of these worlds and are important. There's a point this week in Batman where, you know, the idea is that the Joker knows who everyone is, fine, mm-hmm. but then he's like calling him Bruce in front of all of his minions and henchmen, and I was like, so now everyone knows? Like, it's a major, I think, important part of his characters, and to do away with it, I think, is short-sighted.
Well, I think that the strength of it is, and now I think I understand the way they did when I was a kid, the strength of the secret identity is that you get to see them as people.
Right.
And as regular people, and not Bruce is rich or whatever, but like he still has a, you know, but Clark Kent, you get to watch him as a John Q. Public, and I think that is important, because otherwise they are just these huge beings, you know, and they have no other side. So that's a problem. I didn't want to mention one more thing. And I told you guys this, is that, a long time ago, you may remember that when Bendis first started writing The Avengers and bringing Wolverine in, he couldn't write Wolverine. He couldn't do it. It didn't sound like him. It was like he was kind of Southern. I was like, this isn't him at all. And his new Wolverine is John Constantine. He cannot write this character at all. I don't know who this dude is. I don't know why he's talking like this. It's terrible. It's terrible. It's a great book. Stop writing John Constantine, Brian Bendis.
Maybe eventually he'll find his way to him. But
yeah, he did. I guess he did for Wolverine, but
he's not there yet. So those are the books we wanted to talk about. But we have the patron pick of patreon.com/ifanboy. Every patron can vote to add a book to the rundown. This week it was no clear consensus week, so a lot of votes spread up from a lot of books, and the winner ended up being Empire No. 0: Fantastic Four. Written by Dan Slott with art by Arby Silva and Sean Zaski.
Zaxi? Yeah.
Colors by Marte Garcia and Marcio Menez, and letters by Joe Caramagna. This is the counterpoint to the Empire No. 0: Avengers book we talked about a couple of weeks ago. And if you recall, in that book, the Avengers found out that there was the Kree and a Skrull had teamed up for the first time ever to take over the universe, and they were invading Earth. There was an armada coming, and we zoomed in on that armada, and we saw a ship that was being piloted by the Fantastic Four. We thought, oh God, why is this Fantastic Four on their side? And so theoretically, this issue is going to tell us that it was all just a coincidence.
Yeah. I read the Avengers one because you had recommended it to me,
mm-hmm.
and so I was planning on reading this one anyway. I thought it was... Yeah. A really fun Fantastic Four story. I was really, just going back, I liked the other story. I thought, just because you'd mentioned it last time, you were right. Like, it was like, oh, this is a good big Avengers cosmic story like in the old days. And I don't want that to always be the qualification for why I like something. But sometimes that's why I like Avengers. but, you know, as a setup, I think that this story was fun. They ran out of fuel. I love that. They get picked up as hitchhikers, and they get brought to a casino planet, and it's just like The Last Jedi. You know, and the kids are precocious, and I love that, you know, Franklin and Valeria really are like, she's an Omega-level genius, and he is all-powerful, but he can't really use his powers, but he's super smug about it, and she has the intelligence, but she doesn't have the wisdom.
Right.
And the world, like, she thinks she knows everything, but the world is still a lot smarter than her in general. And then you've got this, there's a fight going on, and they realize that, like, oh, this is not kosher. They're putting people in danger and their kids and whatever. And so, you know,
the Kree Skrull tie-in is that there's like a battle arena on this planet, and they constantly pit a Kree against a Skrull, and it turns out that their kids, because we can't see them at first, they're wearing like battle armor, and they get repaired by drones before they can die, so they fight over and over and over and over again, and then it's revealed that they're a Kree kid and a Skrull kid, and so the Fantastic Four decide they're going to rescue him, and
you know, like Ben Grimm stands on his moral high perch, and then Johnny Storm's like, all right, I'm with you, and you know, they jump into this fray of against horrible odds, and it's the say Jeff Goldblum's sister, but I can't think of the name of the character. who's in charge of this whole thing. She's the profiteer.
Oh, right, yeah. Not the collector, Games Master. What, the Games Master.
Is that who he is? Grandmaster.
Grandmaster.
Grandmaster. You know, and then at the end of the issue, they've picked up the two kids as their new passengers, and that's interesting because the kids are, well, like Damien was actually, just sort of born and bred to be above their, you know, above their age, and you know, they've been fighting each other for a long time, and they're sort of surly, and that'll mm-hmm. be fun. And then they end up, yeah, in this armada, but not really part of it. They're actually being chased.
Warped away from where they were to home, and so they pop up right outside of Earth. It just so happens there happens to be an invasion armada there, so they were sort of there by coincidence. They were not part of the invasion. Kind of a little bit of a
letdown on that last
but it is what it is.
But good Fantastic Four issue.
Yeah, no, I thought so, and I thought the art was real good. The Arby Silva's thing especially I liked a lot.
And it was it's funny, I've said before that I don't notice covers a lot, and I don't think this was a particularly great cover, but I did notice that it was Jim Chung art, and it, like, so that alone made it really beautiful.
He did the other cover too, yeah.
Yeah. I don't like the logo for Empire. It's too small, it's weird, it doesn't right. Anyway. That's neither here nor there. It's a fun issue. I'll stick with this little event, depending on how far out it goes.
Yeah, I mean, there's like a million and a half tie-in books, so I'm not going to read those, but it's promising as an idea.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to Empire. So let's do ratings.
On
Empire number 0 : Fantastic Four out of 5. I'm going to give it a 4. It was a nice solid superhero comic.
I'm going to give it 3.75.
Okay.
If that's all right.
That's fine.
Okay.
I understand. The checklist in the back is it's not the worst I've ever seen, but it's not too good.
No.
Sticking with it, well, this is a special, but I'll stick with the story.
Yeah,
so
me
there
too.
You go. So too. That's the patron pick, and we wanted to thank our patrons over at patreon.com. We give it the $5 or higher level, patreon.com/ifanboy, I should say. The $5 or higher level gets you on Dumb Superpower live on the show, and let's kick it off.
Cassie Dalzell of Belfast mm-hmm. has the power of being pleasant-smelling to whoever she runs into.
Damn it.
Really?
This is very, very similar to what I'm doing.
You have to go with it. We don't plan this.
No.
You know, there will be no, hey, I've been sitting around all day. And, what is that? Oh, that's me? None of that. And then also, like, some people really like the smell of patchouli. They're crazy. But that's what she smells like to those people. But to others...
So she smells like whatever people like to smell.
Yeah. Like, you know, like, you'll smell someone. That sounds weird. But, you know, someone will have a pleasant, like, that's a nice smelling young man or woman, and she will be that to those people. It's a pheromone thing, we're gonna say.
So like baked cookies or
no like human
cut
smell.
Grass
unless that's what that people to smell them like. It's okay. It's not a Yankee candle.
I see. It's not pine like forest pine.
It's a fairly innocuous thing. It's, you know, like, it wouldn't be weird. Like, that's a lovely perfume or musk or, you know, whatever it is that people like people to smell like, that's what she smells like to those people.
Okay. Mario Miranda.
Lin-Mario Miranda.
He's always like he just showered.
Wow.
So... Doesn't get dirty, doesn't smell, you know, can sleep for 12 hours, wake up, and it's like, and just feels always is freshly showered.
Huh. You know what the problem I'm having right now is at this time of year? Is the immediate post-shower sweat.
Yeah, yeah.
So what I've learned to do, it took me way too long, is to slowly turn the temperature of the water down over the course of the shower.
Yeah. There's also the post-shower moisturizing, which combining with the moisture in your skin from the shower, suddenly your head's covered in water.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Sweat the moisturizer off immediately.
Yeah. It's a tough time, but Mario always freshly showered. Even after working out.
Physiologically, it's not an odor, it's...
It's just a physical... It's
clean.
It's now, always, yeah. Peak cleanliness.
Now, I know this isn't really an issue for you, but there is a hair issue there. Because you don't want your hair right after you get out of the shower, usually too wet.
Right. So. No, it's not like you're, he's not wet, like he's right. out of the shower, but it's just, oh. it's like the result of,
after you've
no,
got,
he's not walking around constantly moist. It's just the peak cleanliness aspect of it. I mean, that would be terrible.
Okay. Yeah, no, it
that'd
would.
Be a curse.
It would, because yeah, the hair product does not work.
I mean, I like point. Being, you know, for the fresh shower, like, but yeah. like you don't want to be constantly.
So it's sort of, you've gotten, you've moved along, you've maybe you've gotten dressed, you're dry.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
you are as clean as can be.
Yes.
That's nice. So what if he's like outside, like, you know, gardening, get some dirt on him?
Just, it doesn't matter.
So he always looks unnaturally clean.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little weird, but.
Okay, fair enough.
So there you go, patreon.com/ifanboy. Give the $5 or higher level. You can share on Superpower Live on the show. And that's where you can go help support the show. We have our various stretch goals. We hit our last one, which was what?
The Media Explode.
The Media Explode show. Already forgotten. Our next one is the G.I. Joe show, in which we'll take a look at each episode of the G.I. Joe Real American Hero. After that is bringing back the quarterly barbecue show. So there's all kinds of things happening. Patreon.com/ifanboy. There's Discord only, the Patreon only Discord channel. There's a Facebook group. We have our Hangouts. We have discussion. It's a fun place to be. It helps keep the show going. Helps us pay the bills, and it's really the best way to help the show. If you want to support us, T-shirt store, ifanboy.threadless.com. Those, we have our 8 shirts, including our Stay Home and Read Comics shirts. We did our first big donation to the Comic Book United Fund last week. And going forward, we'll still be donating money from that design to that fund to help comic stores in need during this time. And we have tons of product there. You can check it out at fanboy.threadless.com, fanboy.com/support. That's the PayPal. That's for the eccentric billionaires, or really anyone. Anyone's welcome to donate $1, $2, $25 million, just really whatever you feel like donating. And finally, fanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can find our Booksplode books and a general link. And that's all the ways people help support the show. We do thank everyone who does so.
Awesome. We have a voicemail.
All right.
We have an audio voicemail. So let's see what Sean from New York has to say.
Hey, iFanboy. This is Sean calling from New York City, the COVID capital of the world. I am calling because of the world we live in and what it's reminding me of. I feel like we have a perfect storm brewing of mask-wearing culture from the virus, recognition that we live in a police state with mass surveillance, and that's how it might be best to keep one's identity hidden, and then like the overall kind of concept of identity fluidity. I think The Private Eye by Brian K. Vaughan is the book of our time. Please discuss, agree or disagree.
So... you've mentioned this before. You reference this book an awful lot.
Oh yeah, it's a great book, and it was really sort of prescient in a lot of ways. I just bought it for someone who hadn't read it. Like he's not wrong. It's very much, yeah. Well, the first time we went out to the grocery store, you know, during the pandemic, and everyone's wearing various cobbled together homemade masks before masks became a widely available thing to buy. You know, handkerchiefs and shirts and all kinds of things. It felt, and we all treated like it was normal, like we weren't in this weird position where everyone was covering their face. It felt very much like The Private Eye, which is a world mm-hmm. in which there's no privacy anymore because the cloud broke open and everyone's secrets spilled out. And so wearing a mask in public, sort of hiding your face, has become the thing to, you know, the societal thing to do. And that's what it felt like going to the grocery store during the pandemic, which we're still in the middle of. So yeah, I think he's totally right about that.
It's really interesting how quickly it went from this is odd to this is normal. You know, like when it started, I was probably an early adopter of the mask because I read. Yeah, that's right. That was a dig. So suck it. You know, and so at first it feels very strange because there's all these other people not doing it. And you think, am I crazy? Am I the outlier here? No, I'm going to stick with it. And now it's the opposite. You know, when you see somebody not participating, like, what's wrong with that person? But it's normalized. I mean, now you get, like, I get Instagram ads for various kinds of masks all the time. It's just one more consumer product. And that's sort of what's in this book. Like, people are using their masks as their way. They don't have their, you know, their face or their glasses to do it in the same way. So they use the masks. And, yeah, I mean, it's kind of scary, but it's kind of cool. I don't know if that...
Fanboy.threadless.com for your masks.
There you go.
Yeah, no, I remember the first time going to a bank, and I had like a, I literally had like a handkerchief on like a bandit, and I thought, isn't this weird? Like, if I worked in a bank, would I be constantly on edge? Because everyone in the bank's got their face covered?
I went in a store the other day, and I don't remember what it was, but it said, like, there was a sign. It was the first time I'd seen it, like, no hat, no sunglasses.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you couldn't, because I've gone into the mask didn't get me so much, but I have gone to the place wearing a hat and sunglasses just because I had them on, and I thought, I could get away with anything right now. But I got to say, I love having my anonymity in public. And I don't mean that like in the way that like,
because people are constantly stopping you for autographs.
Well, no, in the past, like in like New York City, I think that there was, I was always on alert that not a lot of people, but there would be like one guy out of 5,000 who'd be like, hey, you know, and it wasn't bad, but it just made me self-conscious. But not only that, like, I just like being a dude out in the world. I don't, you know, like people like have to go to their neighborhood place and like have people recognize them. I hate when that happens. I just want to be so now I'm kind of anonymous in a way, like all the people in the book are trying to be, and I like that.
But he's not wrong. I mean, I think Brian K. Vaughan really saw things, and this book came out, I don't know, was it 10 years? Was it 10 years ago?
Let me look at the date while you keep talking.
But he really it was probably less than 10 years ago. But he really saw, you know, the way things were going with the internet, with social media, with there being no privacy, everyone's life on display, and you know, taking that to the nth degree of what happens if everyone finds out everyone else's secrets. And, you know, it's very interesting. You know, it's sci-fi at its best, where it looks at the world and extrapolates out. And
The book says first printing in 2015. That's the trade. So it might have been 2013 or 14 when the
so about 7 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, listen, the last 5 to 7 years have gone by awful fast. It's pretty easy to lose track of all that has happened in there. It is a really prescient bit of sort of future sci-fi writing. Same, I mean, it's a little more extreme in Why the Last Man, but it was still that sort of same thinking. And the Ex Machina.
Yeah.
So that's his thing. I wish he'd do more things that I want to read, but.
Sean from New York, thanks for sending in your voicemail. He sent it to contact@ifanboy.com. Just send it as an audio file, which you can do. You can totally do it in addition to your emails. You can send us in a voicemail like that, an audio mail. And thanks to anyone who writes in. We keep trying to do more of your emails, but we babble on about books too long.
Yeah.
So let's talk about other shows we've got coming up or out right now. We have our Booksplode show, which the patrons unlocked, and our Jack Kirby's New Gods discussion. And next month, August Booksplode book is Pluto Volume 1. And we have our Mediasplode show, which is out. Our last Mediasplode was focusing on that Thing You Do, the Tom Hanks film. And that comes out monthly. This month's Mediasplode show will be coming some point soon. We're basically halfway through the month, so we got to figure that out soon. Do we tell them the next film we're focusing on?
I don't remember what it is. Before we do that, I'm sorry. Yeah. We talk a lot about Tom Hanks. We talk about him as the GDAT status.
Yeah.
You need to listen to him on the Conan Needs a Friend podcast. Yeah. If you relate to what we're saying about Tom Hanks, I'm not saying I was on the fence about him, but after I finished that, I go, he really is the best guy. He's the best guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks is doing a media blitz right now. He's on all kinds of shows and things because he's got a film out on Apple TV Plus.
You showed me, and I saw it on my feed this morning, he's on Hardcore History. Addendum. Yeah. That's not even their main feed.
So
I'm so happy that he knows what Hardcore History is.
Well, or at least a publicist does. But
you know what? I haven't listened yet, but I bet he knows what it is based on him talking. Anyway.
So anyway, you can check out That Thing You Do.
Let's talk about Tom Hanks more.
Our next film we have picked out is not a Tom Hanks film.
Yeah, it's good.
I
remember what it is now.
Should we tell them?
Yeah.
All right, well, the next episode, we're going to obviously do what we do, to talk about what we've been watching on streaming. There's a bunch of things that have happened. Maybe we'll talk about Hamilton. I'm not sure yet. But what our main focus is going to be on the 87? Martin Brest directed buddy comedy action film classic Midnight Run, starring Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin. Charles Grodin, the unsung hero of that era. And, I can't wait to talk about this movie. It's one of my all-time favorite films.
Yeah, it'll be good.
And one of us has never seen it, so it's going to be a first-time viewing for one of us. So Mediasplode number 4 will be Midnight Run which you can stream somewhere.
I think it's on Netflix.
I think you can rent it. I don't know. We'll give you more information next week because it's not going to come up before that. And so that's what we have coming out right now and coming up very, very soon. But Josh, you have a show.
Yeah, I owe you a Talksplode in July, and I have it booked. It's a guest that I've never had on the show, but it's someone whose name will be very familiar to the people who listen to this show. So I'm pretty excited about that. I have to wait for
it. Tom Hanks?
It is. He's coming on our show. Wouldn't that be great? You get that email. Like, he's actually a huge fan of the show.
Really? Would that be better or worse interviewing Alan Moore?
Better.
Scarier?
Because at the end of it, he would act like he wanted to be your friend. And even if he didn't mean it, he'd be like, we should get together for coffee sometime after this is over. And you'd be like, okay. which is basically what happened to us with Jeff Johns. And it was great. It's a long time ago. Anyway, a book has to come out. Once that book comes out, I will record the show, and then I will give it to you. It'll be probably closer to the end of the month.
That's fine.
But it'll be worth it, I'm sure. Yeah. And that is the show. You can head over to ifanboy.com. You can find all of our podcasts. You can find out what the pick of the week is before this show comes out. Make sure that you are prepared to not be spoiled by liking facebook.com/ifanboy or following @ifanboy on Twitter. And, of course, @ifanboycomics on Instagram, where we're also doing the best of the week in panels. I did some this week.
I saw that. I was very surprised.
I have some more. I've worked out a system when I can do it. You can follow us individually. C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram and Jay Flanagan on Instagram. I'm on Facebook, but I'm not taking friends that I don't know, so don't worry about that. You can subscribe to our YouTube page over at youtube.com/ifanboy. Like and subscribe down here in the corner, and you make sure you tell people. Sorry. I hate YouTubers so much. My children really like them. This past week there was a mini about the best covers of the previous week.
That was last week, Josh.
Oh, I didn't update this.
We have to do this every week, so it's fine. I was just doing it so people could get an idea of what's out there. I mean, the big one from this last week was we did that relationship and comics show.
Oh, cool.
At that time, wives and girlfriends just on with us to answer emails about relationships and comics.
Just saying. Only one of us is, anyway.
Still with that person? Yeah. What do we have coming up? Josh just did a mini about comic series that were missing in action. That's coming up.
I thought you weren't going to do this.
I know, but now I opened the page, so that's fine. That's fine. Our one and only Heroes Con show is coming up.
Oh, that was great.
2007.
That was such a good weekend.
We even filmed the part where we got barbecue.
Oh, man. I have such a good memory of that time.
That was a great show.
That was the... Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, that was a fun weekend. So that's coming up on YouTube, youtube.com/ifanboy. Subscribe, and you'll get all of our shows.
You interviewed Rick Remender, and he goes, I am also an artist. Oh, yeah, no shit. Really?
I didn't know. We didn't know anything back then.
I know.
That was fun. Where were we?
Reviews.
Anyway, oh yes. So if you like the show, please subscribe. You'll get there's going to be content coming out regularly for like the next 2 years on that YouTube page. So you're going to have tons of old content if you've never seen it before. If you like the show, please leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. Is that still a thing? Or
I think, yeah. No, totally.
Wherever people listen to shows, you can rate and review them. Please do. That helps people find podcasts. It helps the algorithm, you know, make it discoverable. It's an easy way to help the show. You don't have to write a full review. You can just leave a star rating if that's a possibility, too. So thanks to all who do that. And even better than that is word of mouth. Tell your friends about podcasts. People still constantly are asking on social media what podcasts are good, and people are constantly listing us among other shows. And we do appreciate that. Thank you. We try to be entertaining at the very least. That's our goal.
I don't even go with that. We try to have fun.
Yeah.
And then hopefully that makes you have fun also, and because that's the shows I like best do that. So
exactly. So there you go. So that's this week's show, and that was fun. That was fun.
Good week of comics. Oh, it was really nice to just read some stuff that really gets you excited.
Exactly. So until next week, I am Connor.
I'm Josh. Stay safe. Wash your hands. Wear your masks. Care about and take care of other people, and they will take care of you back the other way. I think there's something vital about that. I'm not really sure. Bye.